Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and women, I won't even ask if you've been called honey at work. I'll ask, when was the last time you were called honey at work? Or what about in some other important high-stakes situation like buying a car, hiring a contractor, getting the landlord to do something, or maybe in court? Well, the American Bar Association on Monday voted to add provisions to their ethics code that forbid the use of language that singles out someone on the basis of their gender, race, religion, disability, or other identity factors. This includes referring to women as honey or darling or other labels that are seen as sexist. Almost half the state's bar associations already had similar rules, but there was no national rule prohibiting such behavior until now. So women, what demeaning language have you dealt with in the workplace or in other high-stakes situations? And do we need to explain to men what may feel like nice words, innocent words like honey, sweetie, due to power dynamics in conversations and negotiations and other things? Call us at 212-433-WNYC with your stories, 212-433-9692. And since this is breaking out as a bar association story because of the new policy, how about lawyers in particular? Does sexist language make it harder to represent your clients or have other effects that you want to say out loud? 212-433-9692. My guest is Leslie Richards Yellen, the president of the National Association of Women Lawyers. Hi, Leslie. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you, Brian.
What did they do at the National Bar Association that you would add to in addition to what I said? Or why does it matter?
Oh, it matters a great deal. It matters in a few ways. First of all, the way this rule was brought, it was a collaboration of members in the ABA, the Commission on Women, and very many affinity groups. So it was people working together as lawyers to make the legal institution more representative and to make it so that people are more able to thrive. The demeaning words that you were referencing, they serve to diminish and undermine and draw attention to people as they're trying to do their job, which is to be lawyers and to represent their clients in the best way possible. The rule seeks to take out of the toolkit of some people their ability to use harassment and discrimination as a weapon and levels the playing field.
Let's take a story right off the bat. And this isn't a law story. It's a doctor-patient story from Nancy in the East Village. Nancy, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. Am I on?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. I just went to see a new physician this week who is from Bangladesh originally and also lived and worked in London. And he, from the moment I walked in, he kept calling me dear and sweetheart. And I wanted to ask hard questions about a condition I have, and I didn't feel I could do that under the moniker of dear and sweetheart. And finally, I also was culturally sensitive, but I said, look, and I put out my hand. I said, my name is Nancy. Could you call me that? Would you mind? And he was okay about it, and he called me Nancy. Excuse me, until the end. And then he slipped into dear and sweetheart as I left because it's so deeply entrenched. But I had worked at NBC years ago, and I was called short stuff in the department I worked in by a man. And I think it's very confusing for men when they it's a power issue. It's a way of holding on to their authority. If a woman calls me that, I don't feel so bad, but I also question it because I don't know her. Why would I be dear to her? And we're not in England where everybody says, hello, darling. It's just different.
Why would it make you, for men who are wondering in the audience and thinking, wait, because he called you sweetheart and darling, why would that stop you from asking a hard question about your medical condition?
It's because it's demeaning. He wouldn't say that to a man. He wouldn't call a man darling or dear sweetheart. It's a relationship. It's a professional relationship. I'm not in a relationship of intimacy with this person. Mm-hmm. I can talk intimately about things, but to call me that, you'd have to wake up with me in the morning or be somebody that I've seen every day for 10 years. It's not appropriate.
Nancy, thank you so much. Go ahead, Leslie.
What Nancy seems to be saying is those kinds of words diminish the relationship that the doctor should be trying to establish with his patient and makes it harder for him to give her what she needs and interferes with her ability to trust him. And this ABA rule is trying to set the floor for those kinds of relationships. So it would be helpful in the legal profession is if the lawyer knows or reasonably should have known that what he's doing is not within the context of a proper relationship to his client or a proper relationship to other attorneys. That's when this ABA rule would kick in.
Do you happen to know if what she said about the UK is true? Oh, it's not like in England where everybody calls each other darling. I don't know that this would be any more okay in England or should be.
I don't know, but I do know in this world where people are trying, I hope, you know, putting on my hopeful hat, where well-meaning people are trying to come together. At the edges, sometimes there's some roughness where people are trying to figure out how to relate to each other. So I do know that women and diverse people have to sometimes be more accepting, but also in hearing what he's saying, you also have to say, but there's a line and please don't cross it, but I'm willing to work with you so we can reach some middle place where we can both do our jobs.
Here's a caller with a story in the legal context, I think. Dina in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dina.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I hired a lawyer, and I specifically said to him, go to court, do not refer to me as Mrs. or Miss. I would like to refer to as Ms. Just as a man is referred to as Mr., you don't know if he's married or single. And in that court, I felt that if he kept, and he ignored me, and he kept referring to me as Mrs., and I felt that if they thought I was married to someone, the money I was seeking against the people who cheated me out of a lot of money wouldn't take it seriously. And still goes on. I was very disappointed. I ended up losing the case. But words like that, I feel, are very powerful in that it hurts women. We should be on a level playing field with men, and we should have the same kind of respect. And it's not just, you know, in court. It happens, like you said earlier, you know, when you have a resident manager of a building and they refer to you as sweetie and honey, and they don't take, if you're the one that owns the property, they just don't take us seriously. And we work very hard to get where we are, and we want respect, just like men.
Dina, thank you very much. And Leslie, I don't know that you have anything to add to that. Maybe it just speaks for itself, but anything?
It sounds as if it was a tactic, and it sounds as if Dina was asking the lawyer to recognize how whether she was called Mrs. or Miss would affect her result. And it sounds as if the lawyer didn't respect what she wanted, and it sounds as if what he did made her chances less strong. And I sympathize with her.
There are those in the legal profession who see it the other way. In the New York Times story on this, Kim Colby, the director of the Center for Law and Religious Freedom at the Christian Legal Society, interesting that Christianity somehow gets tied to this issue on the other side, says it would change the attorney-client relationship and impair the ability to zealously represent clients. Lawyers have that. That's the exact quote. And, you know, the further explanation is that lawyers have a reputation and responsibility to do whatever it takes to win a case, even demeaning the opposing counsel, to get in the opposing counsel's head. So how much does this decision tie the hands of litigators?
I don't think it ties the hands of litigators. Their primary job is to be lawyers and to be advocates for their client's side. What it does tie their hands is if they engage in tactics where they know or reasonably should know is discriminatory.
Let's hear another story. Sandy in Somerset. You're on WNYC. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I'm an attorney in New Jersey, and I was just noticing that I've been called Petey, I've been called Hun, I've even been called Kiddo, which I also don't like, because I think it's sort of inappropriate. But it's usually been by women, never by a man.
Uh-huh. So is it different, in your opinion? And, Leslie, maybe it is more common for women to feel licensed to do this with other women and with guys. I mean, you know, waitresses and diners, if this is a relevant example, are calling everybody honey and sweetie. So does it matter who the speaker is?
No, not by the rule. If you're going to harass or discriminate on the basis of, there's a long litany, race, sex, religion, national origin, ethnicity, disability, age, sexual orientation, gender identity, marital status, socioeconomic status. So it doesn't matter who the speaker is, because there are no rules about who can harass or discriminate. It's how it was received and whether the speaker knew or reasonably should have known that it would create a harassment or
right.
a discriminatory situation.
And that's
for the hearer.
That's in the legal context. Sandy, do you react to it differently?
I have corrected people at times, especially the word kiddo, since I'm
yes.
almost 50 years old and not a child, and it demeaning.
Right. But, I mean, does it offend you less, or do you feel any less diminished by it if a woman says it to you than a man?
No, it's exactly the same. It's disrespectful, I feel.
And maybe it's about who the recipient is. Do you think these same women, it's speculation, but do you think these same women would not use that same language on men they know in the same kind of relationship they have with you?
I've never seen it happen. I've never seen those terms used toward men myself.
Thank you. And I guess, Leslie, there's the single standard.
Right. What I love about this rule is it lets lawyers hold a mirror up to themselves and who they are and the way they operate and hopefully organically move forward to change. I've always thought I'm the head of diversity and inclusion for my law firm, Hinshaw & Culbertson, and I've always thought that someday I was going to go to bed in one world, the world that we kind of have now, and wake up in a world that's much more full of possibility for women and for minorities. And I definitely think this rule is a huge step in that direction.
Renee and Brick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Renee.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to share, you know, I'm a woman in leadership, and as much as the leadership, you know, is very accommodating on both sides for male and female in the company I work for, I deal with it a lot with customers as well as vendors when potentially one of my male counterparts might make a telephone call and call in some sort of question or concern about, you know, a vendor or repair. And then when I'm the one answering it or when potentially the vendor comes in to fix the problem, they're looking for the male because the male might be the only one that has the answer. And so it gets really frustrating when it's like, no, actually, I know what I'm talking about. I know that this might sound mechanical or technical, but I too know how to articulate the concerns and that I have, you know, within this particular instance.
Yeah. So you have a standard comeback?
Usually it's, hey, I'm the boss, or, you know, I am the one in charge. And that tends to almost give them the, oh, really? Oh, I'm really sorry. I noticed it more when I was working in the Midwest, and people would actually say, no, I'm actually looking for this individual. And no, I'm the one here. Well, no, I only talk to him. But I'm here right now. I can answer this. Actually, I made the phone call, but I only talk to that gentleman. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's so infuriating and so frustrating.
I'm his boss. Can I help you?
Yeah, exactly.
Renee, thank you very much. Dan in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
Hi, doing well. I just had a question on the opposite side of language. Is I use the word ma'am as in addressing respect towards a woman who is my boss or a colleague, and it doesn't happen all the time, but often I get called out that is calling them old or being disrespectful when it's not intended that way at all. What are other ways in addressing you know, with respect.
Thank you. Well, what do you think about ma'am, Leslie?
What do I think about ma'am? I think it's in the ears of whoever is being addressed. So if someone says, please don't call me ma'am, I think you should respect that. But I don't think a term like ma'am is a term that someone knows or reasonably should know is discriminatory. If he uses it respectfully and people don't push back, I think it's fine.
It's not on the list of words that are now taboo in the American Bar Association policy, right?
Well, the policy doesn't have words that are taboo. The words are describing just power relationships and when they're used in a way to diminish or make someone feel unwelcome or try to diminish someone's ability to represent their clients or use in a way to keep someone down or keep someone as a perpetual underclass. So that's the way I take the word.
I see. So all these news articles that are saying, oh, you can't say honey and darling anymore in the legal context, it's not that those words are mentioned. Those are just examples of words that would be covered by the policy, correct?
That could be covered by the policy. That's correct. I'm the president of the National Association of Women Lawyers, and we started with the suffragettes who fought for women to get the right to vote, and to, you know, over 100 years from getting from that effort to now having this ABA rule, which really does try to be a big step in leveling the playing field. It feels pretty good. I mean, things should have moved faster, but it feels good that we're on the threshold of something that's important for civility and for the practice of law.
Let's hear from a guy who's been trained, Ron in Stratford. Hi, Ron. You're a firefighter?
That's correct. I'm a firefighter EMT, and in the medical situation, I've always been trained from knee-high to a grasshopper. When I started, when you're dealing with older women, elderly women, you know, you see that a lot with nurses in hospitals. They'll call them dear or call them honey, and it's like it's just not appropriate. And that's the way that I've always been trained. And if I might, I'd like to make another comment. The whole comment that they made before about some of these Christian groups arguing that you're going to take the feet away, I thought that the justice system was supposed to be blind and impartial. And it seems to me that if you're making those kinds of comments, then you're talking to how attorneys are trying to attack the person, which I thought, based on my college experience, was ad hominem. I thought that the justice system was about the arguments, the person giving facts that support an argument. If you're attacking the person, then it's not a legal matter anymore, in a sense, because you're attacking the person and not getting to the root of what pertains to the legal arguments.
Justice is blind and ruthless in the American legal system. Well, you're a lawyer. How would you answer him?
Well, I like the way he thinks. The way I think of the rule is a lot the way the caller, Ron, thinks. I mean, justice should move on. The machinery should move on. It should be based on logic and the rules of civility and professional responsibility. And to allow people to use race or sexual orientation or the fact that you're a woman, to allow people to use that as an advantage, like, for example, the example that I had that had occurred to me is a woman came to me a while ago, and she's a litigator, and she was her opposing counsel called her, and she's an African American woman, and he used he called her a name, and he took that opportunity to call her a name. To set her back, you know, to try to cloud her judgment, to try to get her to protect herself, to try to get her to use the tools. I'm an African-American woman, and, you know, to use the tools you have to protect yourself rather than to use her tools to protect her client. And one of the beauties of this rule is there's now going to be, you know, it's not going to have to be that woman or all the other people who have to at that moment decide how am I going to deal with this attack to me and my personhood and my integrity. How much of the 100% that I am I going to deal with that attack, and how much of the 100% that I am I going to deal with my clients? This rule is going to put a stop. It's going to have victims like that woman be able to have a place where they can get redress. It's going to hopefully cause these people not to do things like that. And I think justice will be served for everyone.
Leslie Richards Yellen, president of the National Association of Women Lawyers. On the American Bar Association vote on Monday to add provisions to their ethics code that forbid the use of language that singles out someone on the basis of gender, race, religion, disability, or other identity factors, including referring to women as honey and darling and things like that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sweet, sweetie, sweet, sweet.